Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Members of the jury that convicted an Everett man of plotting with ISIS to commit terrorism in America say they found it easy to reach their verdicts. After 4 weeks of testimony, it took the jury only a few hours to find David Wright guilty of all charges against him last month. The judge in the case initially refused to release the jurors' names, but the judge changed his mind as a result of legal arguments made by WBUR. And WBUR's David Boeri tells us what two of the jurors say they've learned about the threat of terrorism. A warning now that this story contains audio that some people may find disturbing.
My name is Rachel Haddock, and I was the forewoman in the jury of David Wright.
Weeks of testimony, hundreds of exhibits, and a relentless assault of hate speech, ISIS propaganda, violent ideology, and graphic video to match. Rachel Haddock says it changed her.
I have to say that we didn't look at anything that had to do with our feelings. We looked at the evidence and we followed what the judge instructed us to do.
Haddock described the towering defendant as pathetic. One thing Wright and his two co-conspirators had in common was this: they lived with their mothers. Wright lived in a basement, a 532-pound man who spent 10 to 12 hours a day on a couch playing video games and surfing online as a self-styled scholar and jihadi warrior. At trial, he claimed he was harmless.
Although I do believe that he regrets his decisions, I also believe that he was becoming extremely radicalized and he was moving toward something that could have been extremely tragic.
The plot he was convicted of planning was the beheading of Pamela Geller, a blogger who sponsored a cartoon contest to make fun of the Prophet Muhammad.
What was your impression of the defendant the first time you laid eyes on him?
If you saw him on the train or the bus, you wouldn't have no impression other than a normal guy.
But as Steve Bowman sat in the jury box, he formed a different impression.
You read papers or news or radio and you think, oh, that can't really happen. How can people do this? But then to be sitting there, it's like, oh my God, this is real.
When he took the stand in his own defense, Wright impressed the jurors as intelligent and well-spoken. He described his conduct as role-playing in a fantasy world. Like Mortal Kombat, the video game, he claimed it wasn't real and he intended no harm.
How credible did you find him when he took the stand?
Minimal. Minimal credibility. I think it was all coaching. He got caught, and I was not buying it.
As calm as Wright was, the jurors believed he was well rehearsed. They gave much more weight to the substantial evidence that Wright had crossed the line from fantasy to reality. The crucial evidence, the two jurors say, were the audio tapes recorded by FBI agents who had been monitoring the three co-conspirators for months. On the morning of June 2, 2015, Wright's uncle, Usama Rahim, tells Wright he doesn't want to wait to behead Pamela Geller. He wants to kill those boys in blue.
I'm going after those boys in blue because it's the easiest target. It's going to be local.
He clearly had a choice to stop his uncle from moving forward with his plan to attack the police.
He didn't say time out, we're joking.
He didn't tell his uncle, this is just a fantasy. Let's stop now.
He did nothing. In fact, he encouraged him and said that he would receive his martyrdom.
The consequences were real, as was Wright's intent, say the two jurors, and that undercut his contention he was play-acting in a fantasy world. Forewarned of Rahim's intentions, an FBI agent and a police officer approached him in a parking lot in Roslindale. This, too, was recorded as Rahim pulls out a knife that was initially purchased to behead Pamela Geller.
Drop it.
Why don't you drop yours?
Drop it.
Drop yours.
Drop it.
Drop yours.
Now fire
it up. Drop yours. Why don't you shoot me?
Where are you?
On still another recorded phone call, Wright would later lie to his uncle's family, saying he had not spoken with Rahim and didn't know anything about what happened.
He had testified that his intention wasn't for anything to ever be real. But if you look at the amount of activity that he had to push this forward, it was just so overwhelming.
Yet the jury was discerning. It concluded that one of the government's key witnesses, a confidential informant who had been assigned to reel right in, was lying. It was also skeptical of how the FBI mishandled some evidence and did not come up with other evidence. Still, the deliberations had no drama. It took only 6 hours to convict him. Neither juror fears for the future. But Steve Bowman is amazed at the scale of monitoring that's now warranted.
You need to have all these people accessing the information, translating the information, building the case, putting all the pieces together. And at the end of the day, this is for this one guy who's living in the basement of his mother's house playing video games. So you can imagine there are, you know, hundreds, thousands individuals out there.
The Joint Terrorism Task Force has now made 7 criminal cases against homegrown jihadis in Massachusetts. Prosecutors have convinced juries of the dangers they present. David Wright may be an emblem of the new normal. He'll be sentenced next month. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm David Boeri.